and welcome to another episode of the Albion Raw here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, on smart speaker, and of course, on our podcast. I'm Aidy Packham and we are in bloom in association with Flowers Unlimited. Today, myself and Alan Wares are delighted to welcome a man who was a real unsung hero of the Albion. He joined the club some 30 years ago, and in that time, he has helped to shape the futures of some of our greatest players. But it's not just the ones who've made it onto the pitch at the Goldstone, at Priestfield, or at Withdean, or at the Amex. Because for every Lewis Dunk and Solly March, there are thousands of others who don't make it. And this man's impact on their lives is just as important as the ones who get to pull on the stripes week in, week out. So, ladies and gentlemen, please welcome, fresh from renouncing his retirement, the former professional development director of a Brighton and Hove Albion football club, it's a Mr. Vic Bragg. Hello, Vic. You're right.
Fine. Thank you very much for the intro.
I mean, we're going to talk about some of the players and stuff that you've worked with and all that. But I mean, obviously, when we wanted to get you on, we were looking into a few bits and bobs about you. And obviously, you put up a post on LinkedIn. And I'm reading through the comments on there, and it's like a who's who of the Albion over the last 30 years. It's like, you know, play, and you know, and it's not just the ones that we see week in, week out on the pitch. It's all the other ones that you've helped, because it's not just about the football, is it, Vic?
No, certainly not. I think the term is holistic, isn't it? that's the new vogue, I think.
Yeah,
you're trying to develop the whole character, and so it isn't about that. I've never thought it was anyway. I prefer to think that those kids who don't make it, more that don't make it than do, are benefited by being with us, not just from football point of view, but from a social point of view as well. So, yeah.
Now the name Vic Bragg and the various titles that you have around, whether you were working up at the university in those days or whether you're working at Lancing, yeah. They almost sound not quite corporate, but they sound sort of quite open to interpretation. So can you give us a flavour? And I don't know how much your job changed over the 30 years, but certainly in the last few years, can you give us a flavour as to the nature of your job and what your kind of, if you had day-to-day routines, but certainly what some of your job, what your tasks were?
Right, when I joined as a part-time, because I was a teacher. So I joined part-time as a centre excellence manager. And originally it was one at Seaford. We had one at Seaford and we had one at Worthing. So I was there. And then I started to work with the under-18s. So I was under-18 manager eventually after taking over from Dean Wilkins. And then I also was professional development coach. That's my final job, where I worked with boys from 17 or 16 through to 21. So I saw them through their early professional years, you know.
Yeah, because when you say you're a teacher, you're actually deputy head at Langley Green, weren't you?
I was a senior teacher, but I did do a time as deputy head as well, yeah.
Sure. So, I mean, so you said that, you know, obviously you've had these different roles.
Yeah.
But let's start with the one you've just kind of retired from. Can you give us, like I say, a flavour of what it was you did? I mean, I say the number of times we've spoken to people from the club and they say, well, no 2 days are different. Yeah. Is that the case for you? And if so, give us an example of 5 days in 1 week that are different.
Right. Well, I'd have a meeting with the under-21 manager and his assistant, and we'd go through what we're going to do in terms of coaching. So in the morning, it would be a coaching session. Prior to that, we may well have a look at the tactical side of the things on previous games or games in the future, so that we get the whole flavour of what we're going to and build up towards a game in future, in the next game. So my job, more recently, because I've been sort of part-time, has not been so involved with the coaching. I've been had a few issues as well. So, but prior to that, I'd do in particular, they like me to do the passing side of things, because the way we play, being able to receive the ball and to pass the ball was priority, really. So I used to do a lot of that with different types of practices, but all with the same sort of emphasis on being able to control the ball quickly, pass it quickly, and choosing the right passes, you know.
So that's a major part of the club's DNA these days, isn't it?
It certainly is, yeah. If you can't pass the ball the way we...
Was it in 1994 when you started? Because I know a few players that couldn't.
Couldn't trap a bag of cement, as they say.
Okay, well, we're going to come back and talk about that bit in a minute, but I just want to rewind a little bit further, because I've been doing some digging, and I've just turned up a couple of really nice things. Now, so obviously, Malcolm Stewart, fabulous former physio, he refers to you as the Lion of Town Mead, but I believe it was Town Meadow back then, probably, wasn't
it? It was Town Mead. I don't think I was there when they had the meadow, but it developed to a mead. I don't know what that meant. There you go.
But, I mean, you had quite a big impact down there. There's a story which I've come across, which was basically there was a Sussex Senior Cup game. It was called something different then, but it was like, which went to three replays, I think. One of which was a game where against Brighton, and the attendance was 316, in case you were wondering. And a certain Mr. Clough and Mr. Taylor turned up.
Yeah, they did actually. Yeah, I remember that. I don't know why. I suppose they had a night off, so they thought they'd come down and watch. I don't think they stayed the whole game, but yeah.
Yeah, they missed all the action, apparently.
Pardon?
They missed all the action, apparently. They left.
Can I just point out that we are talking that Town Mead is the former, for those sort of only of a certain age and disposition, that Town Mead is the former home of Crawley Town, is it not?
That's correct. Correct.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
So
right,
what were you doing at Crawley Town?
What was I doing?
Yeah.
I was playing, yeah.
Ah, so we are talking, actually, I mean, so if we're talking Clough and Taylor, we're not talking about the days when he was a Forest, are we? I mean...
No, they were the Brighton managers at the time.
They were genuinely the Brighton managers. And
yeah.
I mean, so Clough was actually in the south of England at some point.
Yeah, he was, yeah. And he came along to watch the game, I think. Yeah,
probably the only game he watched.
Very possibly.
The reason why I mentioned the attendance there, which is again 316 for a game against Brighton, would have been a big game at the time, but the week after you had your testimonial and 1,700 people turned up, so you must have had quite an impact with the Red Devils.
I don't know about that, but yeah, well, I did have a testimonial. Yeah, I've been there about, I think, 8 years, and they gave me a testimonial. Yeah, yeah. But yeah, so yeah, I played there for about 15 years, 16 years, I think, something like that. Yeah, yeah.
But you only scored penalties.
Hang on, AD, what level? Because obviously Crawley are a League One now, and they've only been sort of in the league for about the last sort of 10, 12 years or so. So what level were we talking about here?
It was Southern League Premier, which is probably equivalent of I don't know what it
I'd
is.
I'd say probably Conference South.
Conference South, yeah. Conference South.
Where Worthing are now, yeah.
I think 1 year we went into the equivalent of the Conference, yeah.
Right, got you. And that's where you were playing?
That's when I was playing, yeah.
Yeah, but you only ever score penalties?
No, that's not quite true.
AD, I'm being rude to our guests.
I did score quite a few penalties, but I scored a few other goals as well. But,
The thing I was reading, you were top scorer with five goals one season, and they were all penalties.
Charming. AD, don't be so rude. Anyway, so let's get on to Vic Bragg, the legend.
Obviously, Vic, so you came 1994. The landscape at the Albion was very, very different to what it is now. So Liam Brady was in charge, I think. Greg Stanley was the chairman. How was it like to work in that environment? And it didn't get much better after, did it?
I was with George Petchy. He was the youth team boss, and then and John Jackson, who played for Palace as you know, he was a youth team manager. It was difficult. It was very difficult because facilities were not the best. Although all credit to such a university, they tried their best to keep the pitches in good order. But we only had three pitches, and that included, or well, it took two and a half, I think, and then it included the first team working on it. So it was quite difficult, yeah. And I used to go out every morning and fill up the rabbit holes because, rabbits been having a right go. And I think dog walkers used to let their dogs do whatever on the pitches.
It's getting more and more salacious every minute, this is.
Yeah, it is. I had one where I went out one morning and we started training, and then this player stopped. Said, I'm not training. I said, what's the matter? I went across. He said, come here, have a look at this, have a look at this. I went across and I saw two little bits of skin sticking up. So I picked up these bits of skin and pulled them towards me, and it was a rabbit's head. Yeah, so rabbit's head had been, and he said, I'm not playing at all. Get rid of that. So I had to get rid of this flipping thing.
Shame it wasn't feet, really, because it would have been lucky then.
Yeah, I was about to say, this, you're listening to the Albion Roar in association with John McLean. Yippee-ki-yay. I mean, that's quite a baptism of fire. I mean, did you actually know the kind of the turmoil and the carnage that you're walking into when you took the gig?
No, not really. I'd been working for English schoolboys, and I was asked to go down there and take over this Seaford Centre. And there was another fellow called Steve Avery, who was academy manager at Charlton now. And he took the Worthing one, I took the Seaford one, and then he left and I took over the Worthing one as well. But it was difficult because I remember Leon coming down and he was disappointed because there was every shirt under the sun, you know, Arsenal, Chelsea. So all these boys, we had nothing. So we had to try and get bibs on them so that we got some sort of identity rather than just seeing every other club there. So it was difficult. And facilities were poor. And also, you know, things like footballs, we had to make sure we counted them in. So we got them. Otherwise, we wouldn't be able to replace him. I don't think it was difficult. Yeah. But Liam was very good. He came down quite a few sessions. He was good like that. Yeah,
you can't think of it in those terms, really, can you? The phrase you use, you can't. Well, I mean, we're talking not exactly Brian O'Hanrahan here, but you know, you count the footballs in, you count them out again.
Yeah, yeah.
That's no way to run a professional football club, is it?
No, it wasn't. But it had to be done because we didn't have the facilities, we didn't have the money. So, you know, it was just one of those things. I think you get to accept it and just get on with it and try and make the best of it. And if we complain about it, you know, it's not good for the kids. So we just get on with it.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you have to cut your cloth accordingly in that particular situation. I mean, at that particular time, and I mean, there were still some big names knocking around in the first team. I mean, Fozzie was still around. Yeah. Nicky Russell was just coming through. Dean Wilkins was still here. Robert Codner was still here. Yeah. But at that time, who were you looking after in the kids that you were with?
Well, if I tell you, my first day going down, I went down to Seaford, and this kid was with his dad, and his dad came up to me and said, excuse me, my boy was here last year for 6 weeks, and they were supposed to give him a decision, and they didn't. So I said, okay. He said, I think it's a bit unfair. So I said, okay, well, I'll tell you what I'll do. He can stay for 6 weeks, and we'll see how he goes. Well, cut long story short, after a week, I signed him, and that was Dean Hammond.
Wow.
Yeah. And so I'd only been there a week, and he was, I think he's 12, something like that. And he went on to have a good career, including some Premier League experience.
Yes, so, he did, yeah.
Well, yeah, he got a winner's medal, didn't he?
I believe so, yeah. And then there was, in that group, they were slightly older, and that was, there was Gareth Barry, Duncan MacArthur, those two in particular were in the group. that I took. And
so,
then...
so whatever happened to Gareth Barry?
Are you serious?
Yeah, exactly. I don't think Dick Knight would recognise him with a seagull on his head, would he, apparently?
I definitely wouldn't recognise him on the end of Brighton Pier, at that matter. But, I mean, actually, I do find it quite funny, because obviously, with it kind of, if it hasn't happened yet, it might not happen at all. But it would book quite nicely the fact that Gareth Barry is currently the league's top appearance maker, and he's... there's a player who's about, well, I think he's 19 games off that now, and that just happens to be James Milner, who knew he could do that for the Albion. So that'd be a nice bookend to that. Yeah. But I mean, also you had a certain Kerry Mayo around at that particular time as well.
Well, Kerry was a pro when I came down. I knew of him because he played for Sussex Schools as well, so I knew of Kerry, and I knew that, and I used to. They used to ask me to go in during the week as well, during holidays, school holidays, to do help out coaching with Dean and Martin. And so I knew Kerry. He had a long career. Yeah,
absolutely.
Did well.
Now, it's interesting the point you're making here about the fact that obviously in your early days there, you were able to nurture the likes of, as you say, Gareth Barry, Dean Hammond, Kerry Mayo, and I'm sure the list is longer and we'll come to that presently. But I do actually want to dip into slightly, I suppose, the dark side of this, in as much as you can sit there and reel off with pride the names that you have nurtured, and it's brilliant that you've done so. And I know, obviously, with the LinkedIn thing that Adi was talking about, the number of players and ex-players who have appreciated all your efforts and all that you've done for them. But not every kid makes it through.
No.
And I'd imagine that probably it's the majority, isn't it, that don't make it through.
Absolutely.
So what can you give us an idea of the protocols that you've got in place, certainly now, versus maybe even the protocols back then, of actually telling someone, sorry, son, don't think you're going to make it?
Yeah, it's difficult. We have a player liaison, or we did when I was there. We had a player liaison person who looked after the social side of the kid, make sure that they knew about the family. And, you know, when we decided, and it's quite a few people involved to make the decision about the boy, if we're going to release him, then it's not just one person, as it was in my time. More or less, there'd be quite a few people. We've got a psychologist who'd have an input, strength and conditioning coaches, and the coach himself, or the coaches themselves, all have a discussion to make sure that they're getting the right answers. So that it's much better in that way now. Whereas before, I would just talk to, say, Martin, and we'd make a decision. But it's the worst part of the job. There's no question.
The worst. Is the worst, is it?
The worst, no question, when you're releasing somebody.
Has that changed? Has it actually become more difficult as the clubs become more successful? Because obviously, I mean, you're seeing, you know, within the age of social media, everyone wants to be a footballer. Well, everyone's always wanted to be a footballer, but now with the riches that you can acquire through doing that, and you know, if you've got someone who's making grade, making their way through it, they're playing for the 21s, playing for the 18s, you know, and you know that they're seeing in their own heads their future mapped out, but but it might not necessarily be as successful as they think they might be. Is that more difficult now than it was at, like, say, 20 years ago when we were on our uppers?
I don't know. I think telling the kid that he's not going to make it is difficult, no matter when it is and who it is. We've got some. I think it's better now. I mean, I remember when I was released by Fulham, I was called in by. There were three of us called in together, not even seen individually. And we were told, you're no longer here. You know what you came into, off you go. And that was it. But now we've got people in situ who will talk to the kids and help them and talk to the parents to try and make it a little bit easier. So yeah. I wouldn't say it's any bit more difficult. It's or any more easier. It's for the person doing the telling. It's not very nice when you've got to tell the kid, no. especially when you get a kid. You've been working with the kid for a long time and they're good kids.
I mean,
it's very hard.
Is it ever the case that, I don't know, I'm possibly just sort of trying to put myself in your position here, which, you know, with that aspect of the job, I wouldn't want to, that you can actually say to, because, I mean, obviously, like I say, once upon a time, it was just you and Martin Hinchcliffe having a discussion. Now it's, I say, a committee. But where you think, well, this kid's not going to make it, but he's not going to make it here. So yeah. I can suggest you go elsewhere versus, well, he's not going to make it here and I'm not sure he's going to make it at the level of football required. So is there kind of, I don't know, a sort of a safety net in place where, I don't know, where education could be offered because they're not going to make it in football? Or, I mean, what is it sort of like is the process so full that, what's the point I was going to make? Hang on, bear with me. Is the process so complete that it's almost as if you can let the kid down easily, or is it just still that human element of, sorry, son, you're not going to make it as a professional footballer?
Well, I think that comes into it, but it is much better now in the sense that when they get to the apprentice stage, in particular, or the scholar stage, as they call it now, you know, we've got a massive education side of things. So they recognise early doors, the teachers recognise, we've got full-time teachers, they recognise early what the kid is good at, and they try and shunt them in certain ways to help them, even before the decision's made. And they may get a good decision, but they've got the education. So the education will always be there now, whereas before it was just hit or miss. Obviously, in days gone by, a little bit further back, boys were sweeping terraces and that sort of thing and not getting any sort of education, you know. So it is much better now in that respect. And I'd like to think that all the staff are very sympathetic, empathetic as well.
Because isn't there a supporting programme that goes on for about a year after any given player is released or something like that?
No, they have an education that is, they can take anything they like, GCSEs. They can take other I don't know, things that they can do in college that will help them, you know. So it's a bit of a safety net for them. They've got that there.
So this is the point I've got now. As soon as we're talking about players released, where I'm going to make you wince. So in the 30 years you've been at the Albion, is there anyone that you've? I'm sure that you, like I say, you tell these lads with a heavy heart.
Yeah.
But is there anyone you release and then they sort of turn around and made it and effectively stuck two fingers up at either you or Martin or the Albion? Is there anyone who sort of like proved you wrong?
Not many, and if they are, they haven't made it to the real top, lower league, you know. So not really. We used to pride ourselves in making sure that we really thought about it and went through it like a fine tooth comb to make sure that we haven't missed anything out. There's one. One story that is the reverse, where we actually took a boy on. I won't tell you his name in a minute. I'll tell you at the end. But anyway, Martin and I discussed this player, and we thought, he's not bad. What do we do? Do we give him a chance or don't we give him a chance? But anyway, Martin went down to see his parents, and he had a couple of envelopes in his pocket. I'm sure he won't mind me telling this. And in one was and a letter to say he's going to be given a scholarship, and another one he was going to be released. And he looked at the letter and decided you're going to be a positive and give him this letter. And this boy went on to have a good career, and he's still got a career. And that was Steve Cook.
Ah.
Yeah.
No, he did do well, didn't he?
Yeah, he's done very well. And yeah. So he stayed with us, Cookie, and he was in my under-18 team.
Yeah.
And he was a good lad.
There was a very good team around that time. There was a lot of players who went on to, not necessarily with the Albion, they went on to have brilliant careers elsewhere, like the likes of Joel Lynch, Wes Bogdan.
Yeah, Joel Lynch was with us. In fact, I got a message from him just yesterday, which was nice. Yeah, Joel Lynch, he was one, did very well. But there was others. Coxie was, I signed it when he was 8. He was knee-high to a grasshopper then.
But, he still is.
Still is.
Yeah, exactly that, yeah. So, you know, there were a lot. I think I've been told that during the time, say I was there, but during that period of time, there was 87 boys made professional appearances.
There's no time for false modesty here, Vic. That is absolutely astonishing.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's even over 30 years, that's three a year. Given the pass rate versus the rejection rate, which, like I say, the rejection rate is pretty astronomical, isn't it? I mean, we're talking 80, 90% here, aren't we?
And the rest.
Yeah.
More than that, yeah.
So, you know, so at least three a year is actually good going, especially for sort of half of that time, a club that's, as Adi put it, on its uppers. Yeah. Not being able to offer the best facilities.
That went right away. That's right away through to the last 30 years, I believe. It's not down to me. It's down to a group of people. People like a fellow called Dave Sargent, Les Rogers, bless him, and Colin Smart, bless him as well. No longer is those sort of people who were part-time coaches. Did a terrific job. You know.
So still with the club, and let's rewind those sort of 30 years. I mean, it's kind of be sort of curious to get an insider's view if you can, because obviously, you know, in the role that you had, you just wanted to focus on the football. You wanted to focus on nurturing the kids and everything like that.
Yeah.
But we were going through some tempestuous times. Certainly those at the top of the clubs for the club versus the fans and also versus the football authorities.
Mm.
Did it actually make an effect on your job, knowing full well that actually those at the top of the club were so deeply unpopular? And did it actually have an effect on how you could go about doing your job?
I'm not sure it had an effect, because I was just determined to work with the kids as best I could and make sure that they got a fair deal. I was obviously aware of what was going on, and I went on the marches and that sort of stuff as well. But we couldn't let that interfere, you know. It had an effect in terms of things like travel, for instance. You know, if we're traveling to a game, we had a van and we had to drive the vans. We had to have another van for the kit. Those sort of things affected us because there was no money. But I don't know. I could have gone to another club, but I just thought it was wrong for me to preach loyalty to these kids and get them to sign and then walk out the door. But it was just, and I enjoyed it here anyway. I enjoyed the people.
Was the temptation to leave there?
Sorry?
Was there a temptation to leave?
No, I didn't. I was offered a job, and they were a Premier Division club at the time. And I thought, no, I'm not going. I'm just, somebody's got to help these. Sounds arrogant. But, I don't know.
No just, false modesty, Vic, please.
No, I just didn't feel it was right, you know.
Sure.
To leave them.
Okay. Well, but during all that time that you've been at the club,
Yeah.
Obviously there's been a revolving door of people that have come in and
Yeah. Yeah.
been with the management and everything else. But one person that's been pretty much a consistent alongside you all that time is Martin Hinchelwood. So
Yeah.
talk about what it's like working with Martin.
How long you got?
Oh dear. And please no swearing.
No. He was I knew Martin briefly from the, but then he came in after he was at the club, and then he came back, and then
he keeps coming back.
Yeah. And halfway through our time, when I was there, he went to become manager again. So obviously then I went in to look after the under 18s again. He's a smashing fella, Martin. I'll get on with him great. And he's one of the funniest people I've come across. And the lads loved him. The sort of things he would do that, you know, the kids weren't sure about him. And some were scared of him. They were scared of him a little bit. But at the same time, they knew that he was on their side. And that's vitally important. As a coach, I always said, you know, you've got to make sure that the kids know you're on the side. But he would, little example, he'd walk out on the pitch. I'd be coaching and they might have a group together. And he'd walk past them and he'd say something like, right, I know which ones of you were out last night. I know. Don't try and deny it. And there was nobody had gone out the night before, but he was trying to wind them up to try and bite. And they'd all be looking at each other saying, was it you? And I'd stand there laughing my head off because, you know, these kids saying to each other, were you out last night? No, it wasn't me. But that's the sort of thing he would do. And he would wind them up, but he got on with them great. He was he thoroughly enjoyed the coaching. And he thoroughly enjoyed making them, you know, professionals. And he's got a very, very good football brain and an eye for a player.
See, I'd like to add to that, if I may, because I think that, you know, for too many people who love the Albion, I think that history has been slightly unkind to him because time that he was his head was above the parapet, rather than being an intrinsic part of the backroom staff, was that time when he was the manager. And we were on a horrific run, you know, and records were broken that we didn't want and what have you. And that, for me, doesn't tell the story of Martin Hinchelwood at the Albion. I think he's, as from the point you're making here, he is so much more than that. And it's just that one kind of blemish in his time here at the Albion, which I, for me, far too many people are judging him on, and I think that's unfair. So,
do you think they are though, Al? I don't think anyone's judging.
There are some people that say, "Oh, Martin Hinchelwood, he was rubbish." No, that's complete. And Vic is here to tell us that actually, he's far from rubbish. Yeah.
Well, yeah, I think I'll add one other thing to that. When he went to became manager, I was away with England schoolboys because I used to coach them as well. But anyway, I phoned up to see how he was and say, how you doing, Martin? And he said, well, I was all right. And I said, what's the matter? And he said, I tore my Achilles. Now, this is the first week he was manager. He tore his Achilles. So straight away, he couldn't get around and coach as he would have liked. So that compounded the issue, as it were, for him. You know, it made it more difficult for him at all. But no, you're right. He's a lot better than people think in that sense.
Yeah.
Well, you only have to look at the what the players say about him, the players that you and Hinch have actually brought through and it together and identified, and like you've done the hard jobs together in terms of letting players know they're not going to make it and stuff. But you know, it's something that, you know, if you look back at both of your career as a whole, it's just such an impressive.
Can I just add something to that as well? Actually, it's so sodding typical of a Hinchelwood to actually tear their, what did you say, tear his crew shirt?
Yeah.
I mean, what is that entire family made of paper?
I don't know. He's always had dodgy knees. I know. It wasn't his cruise ship. It was his Achilles.
His Achilles, was it? Okay. I mean, poor Adam. He had to. I think him. There was Paul, Martin, and Adam all had to retire. Well, way before they were. They're at the end of their careers. I think, you know, yeah. Mid twenties. You know, I'm absolutely terrified for poor Jack.
Yeah. Well,
actually, while you're here and while we're talking about the Hinshelwood clan, you know, he made his debut for England under 21s last night alongside James Beadle. Give us your lowdown on Jack Hinshelwood.
Smashing kid. He's an excellent professional. Excellent. There's no job that he wouldn't do for you. If you asked him to go and goal, he'd go and goal. And he wouldn't complain. He'd just do it. Technically, he's a good player, very good player. I'm chuffed a bit that he's got in the under-21s, but he's such a nice lad. He takes on board everything you say and tries to implement it. He comes from very good stock, as you know. His granddad, Paul, who sadly died a couple of years back now, was Martin's brother. He was a top player. So he's got the genes. His great-granddad, Martin's and Paul's dad, was a professional as well.
Yeah, Wally.
Wally, yeah. So he's got the genes, but he's just a super kid, super kid.
And how far can he go?
I think all the way. I think really? All the way.
In what position?
Yeah, that's a good question. And it's a good question in the sense that what I've just been saying about the fact that he'll play anywhere for you. He won't complain. He'll just do it. But I would like to see him. I like him as a midfield player, holding midfield player, because he likes to tackle like all Hinshelwoods, and he can use the ball effectively. But he could go all the way. But there's no arrogance with him. He's confident, and he'll as I often say, you know, the top pros, they'll do what you ask them to do. If you ask him to eat the grass, he'd eat the grass because if you made him a bad
guy. I can see him doing that as well, you know.
Were you surprised to see him make your breakthrough so early, though?
Yeah, probably. Yes, I would agree with that. But I think he was fortunate that he went in with some good pros like James Milner and what's his name? One to Southampton, back to Southampton.
Oh, Adam Lallana.
Adam Lallana.
Yeah, he's got Lewis Dunk there with him as well. He almost comes across as Uncle Lewis, doesn't he?
Yeah. but he's they loved him, you know, because of his attitude. And they obviously nurtured him, and that's all credit to the club for taking on older players and recognising what their value is, you know.
Mm. So with that in mind, seeing the lovely the tributes that I've seen on that video commemorating retirement, right. What's that all about the Mars bars?
Oh, I was going to ask that in such a different way. Can I ask it in a different way, Al?
Go on then.
So Vic, I mean, obviously, Hinch is like his breakthrough is absolutely wonderful. But he's like the latest on a long line of players that have made the breakthrough for the Albion. I mean, you got the likes of Lewis Dunk and Sully Marches, who I'm sure we're talking about in a minute. But I mean, there is a rumor going around that you've retired because Mars bars are too expensive.
Yeah, you're probably right.
So, talk us what is the Mars bar reward all about?
Well, okay, what happened was that I was taking a session, and it wasn't the first, it was a couple of sessions where we were doing some crossing, and nobody wanted to dive for the ball, no diving headers, and it was obvious that they could have done so. I did a demonstration and headed the ball myself. And then I said, right, anybody who scores from a diving header will get a Mars bar. And that sort of started it off. So they were diving about all over the place trying to get goals.
Just for a Mars bar?
Just for a Mars bar. And it carried on with Solly. Solly, he wouldn't use his right foot, so he asked me on a few occasions, would I do some extra work with him? This was when Chris was here.
Yeah.
And so I said, okay. And so what do you want to do? And I showed him how to vary his game instead of just cutting inside. Could he go down the line? And showed him what I call a shuffle. And he could use his right foot. So I said, okay, if you score a goal with your right foot, I'll give you a Mars bar. And he scored with his right foot. So, you know, and they make me laugh. They're on a lot of money, some of these lads, I suppose. I don't know. I've never asked them. But they still want their Mars bars. They still come and say, can I have a Mars bar? And the same with Dunkey. Dunkey was the same. So quite a few of the lads, I'd just say, listen, you score a goal with your head, or if you score with your dodgy foot, or if you dribble past somebody, whatever it is, I'll give you a Mars bar. And it's...
What was Lewis's Mars bar for?
Well, scoring a goal with his head, you know, getting in the box and scoring a goal from a corner, I think it was.
I'd expect that, though. I mean, at the very least, for someone his size and his stature, you know, if he's going to do that, then at first he's going to get the Mars wrapper. Then he might get some of the, you know. I mean, if he did it, I don't know. If he scored a back heel, then fair enough.
Yeah.
Perhaps that's actually what the free kicks that he takes on the ends of the area are all about, AD.
Possibly. I should.
it's all about Vic.
About Vic's Mars bars.
It's so amazing. It's amazing, though, isn't it? You, a little thing like that, and they still want to get the Mars bar. But yeah,
I mean, has it always been Mars bars, or did Snickers get involved, or a marathon probably at one point?
Well, with the club, I suppose it should be Snickers, but I've always just said Mars bar.
I see what he did there. Yeah, okay, yeah. Well, I mean, let's talk about Dean Wilkins a little bit, because I mean, Dean was another one. Obviously, he got the job as a manager.
Yeah, yeah.
Had an excellent reputation as a coach of the kids, and he had that dream, didn't he, of fielding a team all born and bred in Sussex, and he very nearly did it.
Yeah, he did. Yeah, he was a terrific coach, excellent. His eye for detail is second to none, he is so keen. He's desperate for the boys to do well. I was sad for him when he left, you know, but he's an excellent coach. I worked with him for about 5 years, something like that. And he came down, used to come down to the Centre of Excellence in the evenings now and again. And then, I was pleased when I got the full-time role to work alongside him. And, he was sort of complimentary in the sense of saying, I'm pleased you're coming alongside me. And, you know, it was great because I learned so much. And I think his time in Holland as a coach, as a player, had helped him as well. But he was a terrific coach, yeah.
Do you ever think it was a realistic prospect, that whole notion of, 11 kids from Sussex? Or was it just one of those, was it just kind of a statement with the subtext of, I just want to get in as many kids as possible?
Yeah, I don't know. You best ask Dean. But I think...
Oh, we will.
I think it's a very difficult, thing to do, that's for sure. But when you consider, initially, now... If you go to the Albion, we've got players from all over. I'm talking about in the under 18s, under 21s.
Yeah,
from all over the world. In those days, you know, I used to say to Hinch, you know, it'd be nice if we could be a bit more cosmopolitan and get players even just down from London, but we couldn't afford to do that. But now we've got transport and bring them in, and that makes all the difference in the world because it sort of widens the net. But in those days, we couldn't. So to get boys from Sussex sleepy Sussex, if you like.
Hardly a hotbed of football in tradition, is it?
We've done really well, you know. So that point
I think the rest of us fans would actually consider it a kind of a, you know, before where we are now with the centre of excellence at Lancing and everything. But when you consider sort of like the history of the Albion up until, let's say, us going to the Amex, that time at with Dean, with the youth team coming through, and the number of kids that actually came through that system that ended up having a career, it's quite a golden period, wasn't it? I mean, how did it all manifest itself? Was it in terms of why then, why us, why now? What happened?
That's a good question. We had people who cared and people who loved what they were doing, and that came across to boys. I know that you could say, well, that happens in some other clubs, but I'm sure it does in some other clubs. But we had a group of people who cared. We had good discipline, and we were on the side of the players. They were, but I always like to think that we treated them as human beings first. Too often, I've seen in the past coaches who they treat them as players first. For me, it's got to be they're human beings first, and we have to treat them really well to start off with as young men.
Sure.
And have the right values, and if you do that, you've got a chance, you know.
Can you tell us about, there's now, again, talking about the youth team of that time. So we're talking mid to late noughties here. There was a particularly famous, I think it was an FA Youth Cup game with Dean.
Yeah, Chelsea.
Brighton against Chelsea, I mean, I turned up to that. And I think that a few more people turned up than the club were expecting. I mean, to those that weren't there, I'm just going to quickly explain that, you know, we had the game with Dean and... The club just basically weren't ready for a number to turn up. I don't think we were allowed to take cash on the door because of our license. You know, the club's licensing terms. It's a bit like now they can't take cash on the door. So a lot of people just worked their way in, and then there was this kind of. I think of it now, and I'm almost sort of I can wince now just saying Dick Knight came onto the tannoy and said, "Look, there's a few more people have come along than we've realised. Can you pay on your?" Can you pay on your way out? And I think I'd say at least a good couple of thousand had turned up that particular time. And in a stadium use the word stadium very loosely, hold about 8,000. It was quite full. Do you recall any aftermath from that, Vic?
Well, in actual fact, it was about 5,000.
As many as that, was it?
Yeah. And we started the game and they were walking around the track, the people walking around the track to get a position.
Yeah.
Somebody had spoken to the powers that be and said this game's going to be a sellout because there's so many people want to go watch it. And we had a good side at the time. And
We won.
Yeah, we won. We had a good side, and you know the feeling was we'd got a chance, so people want to go and watch it. Yeah, there's a lot of people there, and I think it was 2-1 we won.
Joe Gatting. I think from memory, they had Chelsea had one good player who stood up above everyone, Scott Sinclair.
Yeah, Scott Sinclair was there. Yeah.
Yeah, he was mustered that day. And as soon as Dean Wilkins changed it partway through the first half, put two players on him, snuffed out the threat, and then Joe Gatting scored his couple of goals and we went through to the next round.
What I remember about that game was, because, I mean, the pre-game excitement was all about Jake Forster-Caskey. And the man of the match was actually Lewis Dunk.
Did he play?
I remember Dunk, he played, I don't think, I'm not too sure Forster-Caskey played in that game. I'm not sure.
He came on as a sub.
Yeah, he's going to say. I didn't think he started. But that Chelsea had a couple of players they paid a lot of money for, an Italian as well. They paid a lot of money for, and that's when they were, you know, really dishing out the money. So it was difficult, but to our credit, you know, the boys worked very hard, played some good
stuff. Brilliant. I thought they were brilliant.
Yeah.
I'll tell you who else was in the Chelsea midfield that day, AD. Liam Bridcutt.
He was.
Yeah, he was. That's right, yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Shows how much he came on leaps and bounds by the fact that we didn't actually remember him from that particular time. I mean, I'd imagine, and this is probably something you've seen yourself, Vic, is that, you know, you might have a particular youth team player of a given age group who is way ahead of everyone else, you know, but then something happens and they either slow up or everyone else catches them up.
Yeah.
And they can have a mediocre youth team good enough to be retained and then go on to great things.
Yeah.
Did you ever sort of see that and you think, well, actually, well done for him making it, but I really wasn't sure at the time kind of thing. I mean, without naming names, but,
Oh, name names.
No. No, lads develop at different stages, and it's especially when you get a small player. You know, you get a little lad and you think, oh, what a good technician he is. How long do we wait before we can decide? Mm. You know, because he's got to grow. It's not all about size, but you've got to be able to hold your own in the professional game physically. And it's all at different times that they develop. And and some develop, as you quite rightly said, and I've seen it so many times, they develop quickly and then they get to a stage where, and through one reason or another, sometimes it's because they don't work hard enough because they think they've cracked it, mm-hmm. or they get an injury or whatever it may be, and then they don't make it, and that's really sad, but it happens. That's the nature of the beast, I'm afraid.
Yeah, well, it's funny. It's an interesting point, actually. I mean, there was always that thing. XYZ players released because they were too small, etc. But if you look at the game now and look at who's playing, you know, you've got the likes of N'Golo Kante, Makélélé, for England at the weekend. I mean, that's not a thing anymore, is it?
No, I think the pitches have helped, believe it or not. I think the pitches have made a lot of difference to some players. Hello. Oh, sorry. The pitches have made a lot of difference because technically, they can show off their skills more, and that gets them out of trouble. In days gone by, the pitches were such that mud heaps, and they couldn't use the little lads couldn't use their technical ability to best effect.
I'll tell you one thing that the muddy pitches did help you do, though, Vic. Blind diving headers.
Yeah. Yeah, nice soft landings, yeah.
That's it, yeah. That's why the players wouldn't do it now. It's because the pitch is too true. They don't want to ruin it. But, you know, I always just harken back to the baseball ground. Or I'd imagine, well, even the Goldstone was a bit of a quagmire now and again. Yeah, just throw yourself on the mud, go for a 50-yard sliding tackle, that kind of thing. You could do that in those days, couldn't you?
You certainly could, yeah.
Okay, well, we're getting close to the end here, and it's been fabulous having you on here, Vic. I mean, and thank you so much.
We haven't even scratched the surface, I don't think.
No, really? We haven't. It never does. That video that's gone out there, and I'm sure that will be added. I mean, I'd imagine there's probably quite a lot that would have liked to have said a few words. I guess that probably that now that you have announced your retirement that. You've now got a sort of a sense of a proper sense of perspective in history as to the achievements that you have actually won over.
I find it difficult to look at it like that. I just did my job and that was it. And if I've helped people along the way, then great. And so I don't like to blow my own trumpet, if you like.
Yeah,
can we do it for you, Vic?
Vic, is this going to be a Martin Perry type of retirement, as in you're not actually retiring?
No, I'm retired. I can't imagine me going. My problem is at the moment, I'll struggle, so I can't coach because it just it's not on.
Right.
So
we're talking feet up, pipe and slippers.
No, I can't do that. I don't know what I'm going to do yet, but last year or so, it's been more advisory.
Yeah.
You know, I've been talking to individual players, and I've enjoyed that. It's been great. We've got the new lads come in, Evan Ferguson, and Andy, and so on. Those sort of players, I just talk to them now and again. You see, sometimes you can see they're a little bit down or whatever, if they haven't made it into the squad. So you have a chat with them, and that's just as valuable, I think, sometimes as if you're doing it, the physical work with them, you know?
Yeah. Okay, Vic, before we finish up, I just want to just quickly ask you about the current coaching setup, because most of them are familiar to all of us. You know, you've got Gary Dicker with the 21s, you've got Calderon with the 18s.
Yeah.
This is the way forward for the Albion, right?
Yeah, I mean, we've got Shannon Roof is the under 21s, and then, as you say, Gary Dicker, both good lads. They'll take things forward, I'm sure. And Cowley's done a good job along with Arthur Brummer. I mean, I think it's when you look at the first team, as soon as anybody leaves, they've got somebody there ready. And I think that will probably be the same with us. You know, I say us, I'm not there anymore, but...
you're still one of us, believe me.
You know, we'll always have, I think, we'll always, Ian Buckman will always be being prepared to put somebody in place just in case we get a coach nicked off us, we'll have somebody ready to go in.
Sure.
You know, sure. And I think that will be the case. And it's a terrifically well-run club. You know, it really is. I mean, and I'm not just saying it, I'm to gain points for anybody, but I don't need to. I think the chairman's terrific. He's done a fantastic job, and so is Paul and the rest of the board in the way they've run the club. And that's been acknowledged, isn't it, over the last year or so about being the best club. But we mustn't be complacent. We must continue to do that.
Okay, so that's the club. So, yeah. Final question. We always ask this of someone who's spent so long at the Albion. What does Brighton and Hove Albion Football Club mean to you?
Well, I wasn't a Brighton Hove Albion fan. I was brought up in London. I played at Fulham, and my brother played for Wimbledon. So, I was more a London boy, you know, more than anything, and moved down to Crawley when I was 16. But so from that point of view, I've never been brought up with Brighton, but it's certainly grown on me, and it means a lot to me. And I love to see them doing well and getting into the Premier League. Next one to make a real impact in Europe would be great. I just enjoy it. And I think I'd like to see it carry on the way it is in terms of its humility and the way it treats people. I think that's vitally important because otherwise everything's hollow as far as I'm concerned. I don't like it when you see some of these teams, they win through kicking lumps out of everybody or having the wrong attitude, but when they win something, I think that's wrong.
And that is all we've got time for this week. So thank you to our very special guest, Vic Bragg. But the best of luck with your retirement. For now, I've been Ailey Packham. That's been Alan Ware. This has been the Albion Roar on Radio Reverb, 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast, and in association with Flowers Unlimited. Thanks for listening. We'll see you all again next week. Cheers. Bye.
The night is young, the moon is mellow, and there's music in my ears. Say, it's Vic there. Oh. night is young, the mood is mellow, and there's music in my ears. Is Vic there?
Hello.
Is Vic there? 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 Is Vic there?